Good morning and welcome to another edition of Better Living, a show about people or organizations having a big impact here in North Texas. I'm your host, Chris Arnold of 105.3 The Fan, and joining us today is Judy Schmidt of the City of Dallas. She's a senior public affairs officer, and they've got brand new information about stormwater management and their new initiative. Hey, Judy, thanks for joining us.
Good morning. It's just a pleasure to be here.
Oh, yeah. Well, we always want to keep everybody in the City of Dallas and, you know, different people in North Texas aware of what's going on with the city, and especially about taking care of your storm drains, your storm water alerts and things like that, where everybody can make sure their property stays safe and sound and everybody's comfortable. Can you talk about the new initiative?
Yes. So, you know, your show's all about better living, and that definitely that's what we want to encourage everyone to do. The City of Dallas has teams that are working on the storm drain system on a regular basis. I work for the Office of Environmental Quality and Sustainability, and all we do is work on environmental issues and programs and topics, you know, every day. And one of them is, of course, water. Water is such a connector for all of us. You know, we all have to have water. Every living organism has to have some type of level of water. And it's important for that water to be, of course, clean. And so living in this wonderful, vast urban environment, there's a lot that we need to do to help keep the stormwater clean and to learn about the storm drains. I refer to them as the lowly storm drain because it's something that people probably don't think about very often. Yeah. But Chris, there's actually over 67,000 storm drains just in the City of Dallas.
Wow.
So, there's a lot of them. Managing rainwater, of course, when we have all the rain, and then also any type of urban runoff that might occur. For example, at your home, you might leave your hose running, and next thing you know, it's running down the sidewalk, and then that's going to, you know, enter the street, and it, of course, heads right to the storm drain.
You know, we got to talk about this for a minute.
The hope is that it's clean water.
Yes, Judy, we got to talk about this, because I believe it or not, I minored in meteorology, and I love to talk about the weather, but also, you know, I've got a yard, too, and I'll be quite honest, with all the crazy heat in the summertime, and you have the water systems and the sprinklers and whatnot, by the time the fair starts off, I turn my sprinkler off because it's going to be straw. The grass will be straw.
That's right.
And I'm like, you know what? I did my part all during the spring and most of the summer, and I want to make sure my water bill is manageable. And the rest of the neighborhood, I think all the different neighbors say, yeah, it's about to be straw. And I'm glad you brought up the storm drains because, as you mentioned, with 67,000 of them, people really don't even think about it. They just, okay, there's a storm drain at the end of the street or whatever it is. But I became fully aware of this when I think it, I want to get the exact storm correctly. There was a tropical depression a few years ago in Houston, and I don't want to say it was Hurricane Rita, but it was one of them. And J.J. Watt was actually raising a lot of money, the former Houston Texan great. He was raising a lot of money, like $300 million, because Houston got flooded out because basically they didn't have enough storm drains. They just didn't. It was like a lot of flat areas, and they weren't equipped to handle nonstop rain. And I was thinking about us up here, because there was a couple of years here and there, and I'm driving over the Trinity River, and I was like, look at that water rise. And you just don't really think about it, right?
Right. Yeah. So the Trinity River, correct, it goes through downtown Dallas, right? It comes really comes all the way through Dallas. It starts at the border of Oklahoma and Texas and runs 710 miles all the way down to Galveston Bay.
Wow, I didn't know go really to Galveston. That's wild.
Yeah, it's wild. So when you've heard the expression, the ocean starts at your door, it really does here. All throughout Texas, for all of us, with the river running, all the different forks of it, the West Fork, the Elm Fork, of course, converge here in Dallas and turns into a single stream, basically, and goes on down to Galveston Bay. So
it even goes into Fort Worth. Fort Worth's got the Trinity River, too.
The West Fork, correct. It goes over to the West Fork, and then those forks come together, that West Fork and the Elm Fork come together and converge here in Dallas. Yeah.
Well, let's
talk. So there's, you know, go all ahead. This water is coming through that connects us.
Now, I know that the City of Dallas, you were sending me this message that I wasn't even aware of this. You guys have three systems. Can you talk about the three systems that the city of Dallas has about the stormwater?
Correct. Right. And that's why it's so important for us to do is as individuals to do anything we can to keep every piece of litter or type of pollutant out of water, whether it's, you know, whether we're far from home or right at home, because we have, of course, the clean water coming into our homes. Mm-hmm. We have the sewer water that leaves the home, our homes. But then in Dallas, we have a third system. We have the storm drain system, and it's managing, as I said, the rainwater, as we talked about already, and any kind of urban runoff.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just, we are permitted by the state of Texas to have that through the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality. And it's just really important for us to keep it, to keep the water clean, whether it's pet waste that we pick up at mm-hmm. least once a week out of our yards or on walks.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really critical that we take care of it.
Can you talk about how sometimes things wind up down the sewer drain? We're talking about the street drains. And I mean, I know some of them actually have some guards on them, but some of them don't. And it's kind of surprising what mm-hmm. what winds up down there accidentally. But then some people actually throw stuff down there. It's like, OK, we just cleaned off the yard and we got the weed eater out there. And then we got the blower and the blower is going to blow it down the drain. Is that helpful or is that not helpful?
It is absolutely not helpful. We don't want anyone to do that.
No.
No yard waste, no oil, no chemicals of any type. We want you to manage your fertilizer, your herbicides, pesticides, all those things you might put on your lawn, or if you have a business and you have teams that manage that for you, please follow manufacturers' labels and make sure you don't, you know, overuse those. Don't ever use those type of chemicals when it's really windy or raining, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so we don't want any of that down the drain. I, too, have seen like someone have a sack lunch at a park and then set it right by the storm drain as they're leaving the park thinking, OK, I'll just use this as a trash can.
No.
It is not a trash can.
Yes, not a trash can. We always say, don't mess with Texas.
That's right. Don't mess with Texas. Don't mess with the storm drains in Texas or the storm water.
Exactly. And again, because you're
and you know, a lot of people don't know, Chris, mm-hmm. we get quite a bit of water out of the Trinity River
mm-hmm.
that's then cleaned and of course and piped into our homes and our businesses every day Dallas.
Very nice. Is there a system for that? I mean, you can pull back the curtain. How do you guys do that? And how long has that been in place? Because that's important. Like again, it's about the environment.
Yes, it's been going on. It's part of the water supply for the city.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, it's another reason why our behaviors, and sometimes it could be a simple thing that we change. For example, sometimes, you know, people tend to leave papers or fast food wrappers, things like that in their vehicles. And then they may, you know, open a window or when they open their car on a windy day, that might blow out. So the best practice is clean your car out every week. You know, keep a trash bag in your car.
Yeah.
You know, if you can, if you take a walk or walk your pet, take a little trash bag with you. If you see something you can safely pick up and dispose of in the trash can, please do that. You know, make it, you know, part of your everyday behaviors to just take care of really our water supply. The other thing that's I've heard that's an interesting fact is that all of us in North Texas live about a mile from some water source, whether it's a pond or a creek
mm-hmm.
or a lake or the Trinity River. So we're all really, when you think about it, you know I live right across the street from a creek. And, you know, most of us do live, when you stop to think about it, we do live with very short distances from a creek. What that means is that a storm drain system is then discharging into that water body,
mm-hmm.
that local water body. And so anything it picks up, any of that rainwater, or if the, like I said, if a hose is left running, any chemicals, pollutants, trash, pet waste, all that ends up getting dumped into that water supply. And then, of course, it eventually goes into the Trinity River. It can make its way down to the ocean. So it's all connected. It's all very important.
It's extremely important. Again, we're talking with Judy Schmidt, the City of Dallas Senior Public Affairs Officer. about stormwater management and the initiative. And we're just trying to make sure everybody's just doing their part. Again, all you have to do is do your part, because at some point it's going to affect you or your neighborhood or your community. So it's just the little things. If you do it over time, everybody has clean water and it's all, you know, a part of the system and keeping things together. Like I said, I mitered in meteorology, so I'm always fascinated with the weather. And, you know, when it's 100 degree days and on end or whatever, it's not that much rain. And you see the river go down low, or the areas where you live is kind of low. And you kind of worry about that. And then sometimes in the spring, it just rains and rains and rains. And you watch the water levels go up. For you personally, which is the more interesting or critical thing to be concerned about? The lack of rain or way too much rain?
So we have to manage both, right?
Yeah.
And so that's why we talk about, you know, you've got to save every drop of water is precious.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so important not just to save it, but also and conserve it, but also to keep it as clean as possible. And what that means is we have to keep all of the urban environment clean.
Yeah.
You know, we have to be, each of us have to be responsible for that. Whether it's, as I say, it's our own yard, it's the business. If you see that for some reason, the building that you work in, they seem to let the trash cans really fill up and don't empty them out as frequently, or mm-hmm. there's not a tight lid on it,
mm-hmm.
and things tend to blow out and will end up in the street and then ultimately in the storm drain. It's all those things that make such a difference and will help us moving forward, because if there's one thing we all have, and that's water. So, and that water that we have that comes into, whether it's that clean water coming in, the wastewater going out, or, you know, the water that's in that municipal separate storm sewer system that the city operates and has a permit. And we have multiple departments working on that, not just our department, but when you stop and think about it, the city has the airports that we
mm-hmm.
that we manage. And so we have environmental teams at the airports that have to make sure, you know, there's certain things that don't get into the storm drains there. So there's a park department, there's, you know, transportation, public works, there's so many different departments. We're all working together on this permit that we then report, you know, every year to the state of Texas, that we've done our part to work with as many people and businesses that we can to keep the stormwater clean, the storm drains clean. The other thing I want to just mention is if you see a damaged storm drain or one that is, you know, full of debris mm-hmm. or, you know, vegetation growing out of it or a lot of litter in it, it's very easy to call 311 and just report it. Basically, they need the location, but also you can download that 311 app and have it on your phone, and that app will automatically pick up the location and then report it to 311. But that's a good practice that people can do as well if they see that.
Yeah, it's so simple. And again, I'm glad you brought that up, because I'm sure a lot of people were wondering, well, what can I do to do my part and make sure that, you know, the city is aware? Because sometimes, you know, you don't know unless somebody brings it up. And so that's part of the interconnectivity, where everybody can do their part and keep the city beautiful. We were talking about the different types of weather, where it's really, really rainy or if it's really, really dry. I've neglected to bring up the winter, where you've got snow, but quite a bit of ice. Can you talk about some of those challenges and how that might affect, you know, the drains or getting things out, or the trucks getting out, and the things you have to deal with on that end too? Because I think on a whole, you know, City of Dallas does a fine job.
Well, yes, again, you know, when we get that ice that we often do in those winter months, you know, that's going to melt when mm-hmm. the temperature warms up. And then that becomes urban runoff, if you will, that's just running into the storm drains. Yeah. And so, again, you know, anything that was under that ice is going to melt and then just go down the drain along with it. So, and you know, it's a big urban environment that we live in.
Mm-hmm.
And so we all just, you know, do everything we can to try to keep the water clean,
not use the gutters as trash
not
cans.
Use the storm drains as trash cans.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah, we got to just do our part and just like I said, be aware. Is there a particular part of town? You were talking about how, you know, it seems like everybody's near some sort of water, whether it's a creek, a river, a lake. And I'm so into, like I said, the meteorology and geophysical stuff. One of the first things I realized when I got to Texas way back in 1980 was all of the lakes in Texas, except for Cato Lake, are man-made lakes. And it blows my mind because some of these lakes are so magnificent. And here in Dallas, I mean, all these different lakes that touch in Dallas County or Tarrant County and just North Texas area, it's amazing that they're all man-made. So I was just wondering, is there a particular part of town or is there a particular area where there's even, you know, like a lake, like White Rock Lake, that you say, you know what, that's the area, or Mountain Creek Lake, well, that's the area where we have to have more diligence, or, oh, we don't have to worry as much because whatever, whatever. I'm just trying to figure that out in my mind.
You know, we really need to be diligent, you know, everywhere at all times.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, that is one place where you can see after a major rain event, if you get a chance to go down to the lake, where you can see a lot of litter and floatables that end up on the shoreline that then that are then picked up by the volunteer groups that very regularly work in that area. And there's, you know, of course, many, many other places throughout Dallas, but we have to be vigilant at all times. It's just something that needs to just be just part. It's as if we're breathing the air. We're also just making sure that we're not littering and polluting. Try to slow down your use of single-use plastics.
Mm-hmm.
Try to reuse things instead of buying so many, you know, new. You, if there's something that you can wait on buying, slow down on buying new things. I know that when I go to the grocery store, I try to take my own reusable bags with me. So there's things that we can do to just, if all of us work on it all the time, that we can help reduce the volume of litter and pollutants that ends up in our water supply.
Yes, ma'am. We're talking with Judy Smith, Communications Managing, a Marketing Manager for the City of Dallas. And Judy, just to have you on the phone here, you've been with the City of Dallas for 16 years now. I know you love what you do because you wouldn't be doing it for 16 years.
I do.
So could you talk about some of the parts that you love to do about your job? I mean, I love the fact that you're a very empathetic person and the fact that you kind of look at the big picture and see how you can help with the little things to make this city run so well. Could you talk about what drew you to your job and how you got there? Because people love these stories.
Just helping give the environment a voice. That's what I really, that's mm-hmm. one of the things I really love about it. Let me re-say that.
Mm-hmm.
Helping give the environment a voice is something that I really enjoy.
Yeah.
And that I'm passionate about because it can't speak for itself.
Right.
And so it's just good to be able to interact with people, work on programs. You know, I'm the senior public information officer, but I also supervise the outreach team for the Office of Environmental Quality and Sustainability. So we have a chance to engage with, you know, many people in different ways throughout the year and just help them understand how we are all connected. And if any one thing breaks down or becomes overwhelmed with pollution or a problem, it's going to affect everything, you know, down the line. So just seeing people make that connection is something that I'm really passionate about and that I enjoy doing, and just telling stories about the environment, the success stories,
mm-hmm.
and just things that people maybe don't know. For example, when I mentioned that we get a lot of water from the Trinity River every day,
mm-hmm.
that's then, you know, clean through the wastewater treatment plants and then put into our homes and businesses here in Dallas. Most people don't know that. They sometimes don't view the Trinity as a major water contributor.
Yeah, because it's not as big as the Mississippi
Texas,
River.
But it is.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, they say, well, it's not as big as the Mississippi River, so it's just there. You know, and it's,
yes.
Yeah, they kind of take it for granted sometimes.
Yes, yes, absolutely. But it's just to me, it's so exciting to just help people understand it better. And that's what it's all about, right? Communication, mm-hmm. and just passing out information.
You know, you mentioned the Trinity River, and you've been, like I said, you've been in your position for like 16 years. when they started building those bridges over the Trinity River, what were your thoughts? Because they are so impressive and they just really add to the skyline. And it kind of highlights there is a Trinity River as opposed to, oh, yeah, we're going over this. Oh, look way down. There's a river. You know, I was always impressed when they started building the bridges and what it looks like, especially a lot of these drone shots.
Yes. And that was, I think, a great help for people to be able to make that connection. To see that, oh, yeah, there is the river.
Mm-hmm.
And, the bridges really have helped do that. And there's just a wonderful environment all along the river.
Right.
Places to go and things to see.
There's some paths down there, too.
All the way through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people really don't, if you haven't had a chance to, you could, like I said, go online and look up about some of the different areas around that Trinity River where you can actually get down there and actually walk around or ride a bike. I mean, It's like a hidden secret in a way sometimes.
Yes, yes. It is a hidden gem. It really is.
So while you do what you do, let's remind everybody once again, it's about the storm water, the storm drains, storm drain, everything about it that just do your part to help out. And it's also helpful because it's going to help you in your own neighborhood keep it beautiful, right?
Right. Absolutely. Well, yes, absolutely. It helps in your own neighborhood and it helps in the ocean. It helps all the way down, all through Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Once the waters leave here, all the way down to Galveston Bay. And then, you could be benefiting, wildlife and marine life, plant life all along Galveston Bay and out in the ocean. So it's, we're all connected. Water connects us and it's all part of creating a better living for each person.
Oh, you summed that up so nicely. Where can people find more information before we let you get out of here?
I'm sorry?
I said, where can people find more information on the drain systems and the storm water and the drain, all the different things about the storm waters? Where can they go on the website?
Yes. Right. Well, there are several places that you can go. You can go to greendallas.net,
mm-hmm.
or you can go to wheredoesitgo.com to learn more about what we've just talked about this morning.
Fantastic. Again, thank you again for joining us. Judy Smith, City of Dallas, Senior Public Affairs Officer. And again, it's the Storm Water Management Initiative. Thanks again, Judy.
Thank you, Chris.
And joining us right now, Dr. Joe Harrington, the superintendent of HEB's ISD, and Jenny Iyer of the American Heart Association. World Heart Day is coming up on September 29th. That's a day meant for raising awareness. American Heart Association wants everybody to know. Are you ready to restart the heart of someone you love? First of all, Jenny, thanks for joining us. Did I pronounce your last name properly?
You did. You did great.
Oh, I got lucky. Sometimes I can get lucky. Even a blind squirrel will find a nut every now and then. You are the Vice President of Health Strategies with the American Heart Association here in North Texas. Can you talk about how the American Heart Association helped guide Hearst Euless Bedford ISD to make sure they were ready for inevitable cardiac emergencies? And then, Dr. Harrington, we're going to talk about what you've been doing in your particular area to help people know that this is a district of life service. Jenny, first of all, how are you able to help the awareness for the HEB ISD?
Absolutely. Well, I should say that starting out, HEB ISD and Dr. Harrington and Nurse Joy were doing some amazing things to get their district prepared in case of a cardiac emergency. And so we were able to come alongside them and just kind of steward that process,
mm-hmm.
of developing a cardiac emergency response plan and kind of dotting the I's and crossing the T's, making sure that everyone was aligned in the thinking, making sure that we were sharing the same message and that it was following the guidelines that the American Heart Association has. And Dr. Harrington and his team were ready to go, ready to see what they needed to do to kind of cross that finish line into developing and adopting a full response up for cardiac emergencies. And That's really what we were able to do, supply them with additional CPR kits, talk about some policies just to be thinking about and making sure that district-wide everyone was aware. Where are the AEDs? Are we talking about CPR regularly? Does everybody know the two steps for hands-only CPR? And in the end, the team at Hurst Euless Bedford ISD is helping us to create a nation of lifesavers right here in North Texas.
That is fantastic. So, Dr. Harrington, I got to ask you, when this first came across your desk, what was the initial reaction, not necessarily on your part, but when you were thinking, okay, I got to make sure everybody's on board? How hard was it to get done? And what was your first thoughts when you saw this?
You know, they sent me this flyer about being SERP compliant. So, you know, cardiac emergency response plan. And they said, you know, they said, take a look at this. We think HEBISD is really close and you'll be one of the first big districts, maybe the first district in Texas that is fully compliant. And, you know, the first thing I thought of is being SERP compliant just doesn't sound real cool.
Yeah.
And so if we're working on a nation of lifesavers, that's when we started talking about let's be a district of lifesavers.
Nice.
That's something that I think we can get our parents excited about, get our campuses excited about. So we started talking about that. I met with our head of nursing, Joy Cohane, who's been itching to just push this to the next level. And we let Joy and her nurses take over. And we established the protocols that we needed in place, the emergency response plan, the teams at every campus. And then we've been working on the hands-only CPR, expanding that, getting more kids that muscle memory, more practice. Because, you know, the graduation requirement is one time between grades 7 and 12, one time of CPR is not enough.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're working on is how do we do that more often? How do we have more touch points? And those kids are ready. They're ready to save a life.
How many schools are in the Hurst Euless Bedford district? I mean, because I'm thinking about how the word gets out and how, you know, and how long ago did you start with this program? Because it's just absolutely amazing. And I just want to know, it wasn't like you just snapped your fingers and it was there in place for all the schools to do this.
Yeah. So, you know, honestly, our nursing program had us really close, but we're 21 elementary schools. I've got 5 junior highs, 2 big high schools, LD Bell and Trinity.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've got a CTE building. I've got my alternative school. But when we started working with our nurses, we were able to put this in place pretty quickly. Now, we're still working on some pieces. We're writing into our curriculum for 5th and 6th graders to get more practice. That's why it was so important, the work with the Heart Association and our head of nursing, getting more CPR kits. At one point, we're a district of 23,000 students. We had 8 total kits. That's
Whoa.
It. 8. That's
and,
it.
And,
yeah.
And how long did it take you to get as much as you needed?
Well, no, and that's the thing. We're already over halfway there between the American Heart Association and our head of nursing. I think we're into the 40s. Joey wants 63 kits or 64 kits, and we're going to get there. But that's what we need. We needed more kits for people to get practice.
Mm-hmm.
And then Harris Methodist HEB Hospital is now a teaching hospital, and they have offered their interns. So their interns
Oh, nice.
Are going to come over and help us with our 5th and 6th graders and get those touch points. Our coaches and our band directors are actually scheduling so they can get hands-only CPR and get on those dummies during their practices,
mm-hmm.
like dedicated day that we're going to do this. And if we do this on a regular basis, it's not one time between grade 7 and 12. It's a whole bunch of times.
Oh, I love this. I'm curious about the enthusiasm level on different ages. In other words, in my mind, tell me if I'm wrong, the grade school and maybe the middle school were more on board initially than the high schoolers. Because, you know, they're a little bit more skeptical when they're teenagers. You know what I mean? I'm just kind of curious about the age demographic of enthusiasm for this program. And then, of course, I'm going to ask you about the parents and the families.
Yeah. So what's interesting is, you know, you have the old jump rope for heart. You have the Kids Heart Challenge. So everybody thinks about that program and you think elementary school. So we just recently were talking to LD Bell and Trinity about bringing what they call Finn's mission, which is a program where you learn about, you do your hands-only CPR, you learn about signs of stroke. They go through a number of learning opportunities, but the kids can earn community service hours. Well, those National Honor Society, that's gold. So they're actually, LD Bell and Trinity are scheduling to do a competition to see who can have the most kids earn these community service hours.
There you go.
Finn's mission. Oh, yeah.
I love it because kids are competitive anyway. And again, you're talking about different schools. It's like school pride.
Oh, you get a trophy between LD Bell and Trinity and it's on.
Oh, I love this. And again, when did this all start? I'm just trying to wrap my mind around how long did it take to get this thing up and running and rolling?
Well, and we're still in the process of getting up and running.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, a lot of it's been over just the last couple of years. Our head of nursing was really pushing. And I think it was the getting the American Heart Association to give us that extra little bit of help that has put us where we are now.
Dr. Joe Harrington, he's a superintendent of HEBISD, the District of Lifesavers. Hey, Jenny, let's talk again about how you guys the American Heart Association wanted to try to help get this initiative, the Restart Hearts, into all the different schools and what has it taken on your end?
Sure. So, you know, it was really wonderful when we started having conversations with HEBISD. We started those conversations knowing that there was a huge willingness mm-hmm. to know how they could become a safe safe school district and focused on CPR in particular. It was really great to start out having those conversations with Dr. Harrington, with Nurse Joy, just about what they were already doing. Mm-hmm. And then looking at kind of the other check boxes that we wanted to check in regards to having a cardiac emergency response plan be fully adopted by the school district. From the AHA's perspective, we wanted to know what we could do to support them. So we knew that they were trying to get more CPR kits into their schools. Well, we're able to help that through some amazing companies that have come alongside us and said, hey, we want to support the American Heart Association and support CPR efforts and put more kits into schools. So we have companies that have allowed us to give kits to the school district. We've also been able to give them a roadmap. So a lot of school districts are probably doing some amazing things around CPR, but they don't have it all in one place, right? So mm-hmm. their athletic department might be doing a couple of things over here, and their nurses might be doing a couple of things over here. But it's just putting it all in one place and under one kind of umbrella. So that's really where the American Heart Association tries to come in alongside a school district is, okay, you've got some great things going on here. How can we coordinate it? And then we also, we've got an amazing superintendent on the line right now, an award-winning in the American Heart Association's eyes of a superintendent. And we want to make sure that leadership is on board, right? And we want to make sure that what we're putting into place with the cardiac emergency response plan is not here just because Dr. Harrington at HEBISD wants it there. It's not there just because Nurse Joy wants it there. It's because it's going to be a school district policy, or not policy per se, but a school district focus for a sustainable future, right? So the work that we're doing is not going to leave if somebody leaves the district. It's there for the long haul. And that's really what the AHA is there to do, is to make sure that these things that a school district is already doing, that we're able to elevate it and take it to the next level, and that we're able to ensure that it is sustainable, that it's not going to happen for just a couple of years, but that it is going to be ingrained in the everyday life of that school district. And that's really what the AHA can help to do and really can help to put on paper, to just coordinate those efforts and make sure that at the end of the day, that if somebody unfortunately has or experiences a cardiac arrest on a school district on a school district campus, that everybody on that campus knows what to do to jump in and to save a life and get that, as we're talking about heart restart a heart day, is able to restart that heart.
You're so right. And again, cardiac arrest or cardiac emergencies always happen. It's not like, oh, it'll never happen here and we can prevent it. No, you just have to be prepared for the situation. In other words, if everybody's on board and most people in the school or the community knows what to do, you can actually save lives. You can restart some hearts. So Dr. Harrington, I was going to ask you about the parents. So let me go ahead and ask, how hard was it to get the parents on board too? Was there any pushback? Did they need more information before they wanted to get the schools involved? Tell me about what was the response initially and how's it going? Because sometimes parents are reluctant.
No, and we it's everything we've heard from our parents is positive. When we put out the information on when we were named a district of lifesavers, the feedback on Facebook was just outstanding. People were so excited, and then people were sharing their stories. You know, I have a child with a special heart, and I am so excited to hear this, or this happened in my family. Mm-hmm. They want to know that we're ready to step in if we have to.
So,
and you know, Chris, let me share one other piece, and it goes along with this. When I first got on the board, they were talking about why this was so important and why it's so important in our area. And it was just an interesting fact that you have a better chance of surviving a cardiac incident in Seattle than you do in Fort Worth. And it's not doctors and it's not a lack of medical service. It's, are people ready for CPR? Are people ready to step up and do that? And there are more people ready there. And I'm like, as a 60-year-old man, that's unacceptable. And so we're going to change that and make sure that we have just as many people that are upstanders and ready to step in, and they will take action.
I love it. And again, this is something that just being prepared for. It's just like being aware, because it will happen. It's not like, oh, we can prevent it. No, it's not about preventing it. It's about restarting a heart, saving some lives when the situation does occur, because it does mm-hmm. occur. And Jenny, can you talk a little bit about the different techniques over time that, you know, the American Heart Association has been a part of, as far as either making it more simple or making it easier to help save some lives out there? The techniques.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, just a few years ago, when many of us were taking CPR classes or just knew about CPR, we watched CPR being performed in a movie on TV.
Yeah.
You know, always mouth to mouth, right?
Right.
We always saw mouth to mouth. And, you know, that is for so many people a barrier to doing CPR at all. And so Dr. Harrington just mentioned it's, you know, we've got outcomes much better in Seattle than in here in North Texas. And that's because there are barriers to wanting to do CPR on a stranger or even somebody that you know, because we have in our mind that you have to do mouth to mouth, and that can be scary. And so what the American Heart Association has found through research, so this is a very research-oriented process that the American Heart Association funded research to look at what happens, you know, looking at the different things with that go along with CPR. Mm-hmm. If a bystander, just a layperson, you know, if they just used compressions only, what are the outcomes in that? And through looking at research and looking at the data, what the funded research showed is that outcomes are very, very similar for an individual who experiences a cardiac arrest when we use hands-only CPR, when a bystander uses hands-only CPR versus that mouth-to-mouth compressions or mouth-to-mouth in addition to compressions.
Right.
And so what the American Heart Association has been trying to get the word out about for several years is compressions only can also save a life. Hmm. We need to get the blood pumping, and those compressions, without having to do the scary and mouth to mouth that makes people so nervous, you don't have to worry about that. Let's take away that barrier. And when we take away that barrier, more people are likely to perform CPR. And honestly, it's about getting hands on the chest quickly. And so if we can take away that barrier, more people are going, we know that the outcomes are very, very similar. And we know that more people are likely to actually perform CPR. So that's the message we're trying to get out. There are two steps to hands-only CPR that can save a life. Calling 911, no matter what,
yeah.
We want Calling 911 is incredibly important. Right, we need emergency services to come because they are bringing additional resources and medical technology that we do not have as bystanders. But as a bystander, call 911 and put hands on a chest as quickly as possible. That hands on the chest, those hands on the chest are going to get the blood, that heart, you know, you're acting as that external heart to pump the blood and to keep it moving until emergency services gets there. And hopefully by spreading this word, we are taking away the barrier of that mouth to mouth and letting people feel more confident. Okay, I don't have to remember how many compressions versus how many breaths. I just need to focus on compressions and I'm going to do it. And by calling 911, you're actually going to have a coach on the other line because that telecommunicator that you're speaking with is going to be able to walk you through it.
You know what? Slow down right there because you said something very important. Some people think when they call 911, you got to be calm enough to say where something is going on and they're going to send some people out. But what you just said is there'll be somebody on the line that can help walk you through helping that person out who needs a heart restart.
Exactly. They're going to be able to coach you, tell you how quickly you should be going, giving you cues on the depth that you should be reaching. You're going to have a coach. So it's important to call 911 for a variety of reasons. We want medical services to come, but know that the person on the other side of the phone that's talking to you, because of some advocacy efforts with the American Heart Association and many other organizations, the person on the other side of that line is going to be trained in telephone CPR. And so you're going to have a coach that's going to be right there with you, helping you along the way.
We're talking with Jenny Iyer, Vice President of Health Strategies with the American Heart Association here in North Texas. We're also talking with Dr. Jill Harrington, Superintendent of HEBISD. And you know what? Sometimes people are afraid of something that they don't know. In other words, I've always raised my kids by telling them, don't be afraid of stuff. You say you either understand it or you don't, but you don't have to say I'm afraid or I'm scared. And I use the example of, you know, that's a worm and you know, that's a snake. But you just don't be afraid because they're similar. If you know more about it, you're not scared of it. You're aware of the situation or you're aware of the particular animal or the particular situation. I think that's about a comfort level of being able to execute or being in a situation where you're more comfortable. So I love the fact that kids are learning, you know, how to restart hearts and help people out in inevitable cardiac emergencies. So with Dr. Harrington, can you talk about how, you know, with some kids, they're like, you find out there's some kids, they're one of these days, they might be a rescue worker. They might be somebody that's with law enforcement or a fire marshal or somebody because they're comfortable with that. Can you talk about how it allows some kids to rise to the occasion and it also allows other kids, at least they know and they can find somebody quickly, like you said, with the 911 who can actually help them help out?
Well, and that's, I think, so important about how, you know, the more people we get trained,
yes,
there are going to be people that are more comfortable that will get down and they will do the CPR. I need someone to make that 911 call. It's amazing how many people will hesitate there also. Mm-hmm. And we've got to get, if the more people we get comfortable with this, the greater chance that both steps are going to take place. And so by continually training, getting them comfortable, getting them to understand you're not going to hurt them. People are afraid they're going to do it wrong.
Right.
If they're not responsive, go ahead and start CPR. You're not going to hurt them. I remember one of the best trainers I've ever had when I did CPR, he reminded us, he goes, if they need CPR, they're dead. They don't mind. Go for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have nothing to lose. You're going to save their life. The worst thing is if you do nothing at all, then they're gone. If you do anything, you have a chance to save their lives.
Correct. And that's the thing, is getting them past that moment of fear, because there'll be a moment of fear. Get past that moment of fear and then take action.
Jenny, are there other ISDs in the North Texas area that you guys have started working with? Because we know, right now, bragging rights right now, HEBISD, District of Lifesavers. Are there other districts that you guys have been in touch with, and are they baby stepping this thing along, or they're further along? Just kind of give us an idea of where you're standing and how people might be able to help out in their districts as well.
Absolutely. So we, of course, want to continue to give kudos to HEB ISD as they have crossed that finish line into adopting it and are working to continually put it into place. We do have a couple of other districts that have reached out actually because they've heard about what HEB ISD has done and
Oh,
they
good.
are interested in learning more. And so I appreciate you having us on to talk because hopefully this will spread the word even further. And so we just recommend that if any school district is interested or listening in and wants to know more, you can certainly reach out to your local American Heart Association office. We are equipped to help in any way to get you the information you need to get the ball rolling. And if you're a parent that is interested, we ask that you reach out to the Heart Association as well. We're happy to talk and to bring resources. So we've got a handful that are interested, and we'd love to expand that. As Dr. Harrington said, they've got a district of lifesavers, and just imagine if we could have more than just a handful of district of lifesavers, we really would start knocking on the door of that nation of lifesavers so that if you have a cardiac arrest anywhere in North Texas, you have a good chance of someone performing CPR and giving you a better chance of surviving that cardiac arrest.
What I love about
And
this,
then,
go ahead, Joe.
oh no, Chris, I was just going to add too. Jenny and I are going to be presenting at Region 11. The school districts are broken up into regions, and Region 11 is the Fort Worth region.
Good.
And we'll be presenting to all the superintendents at the October superintendents meeting. So we're excited about that, to share what we're doing in HEB, and then to share how this can be implemented in other districts. And that's exactly what we want. We want people to hear about the District of Lifesavers, and we want them all to be part of it and want to be part of it.
You know, about spreading the word, this is what's so wild. You know, even on this show, you'd be surprised who says, wow, I never thought about it like that, and maybe I too can help. Have you thought about how this is actually beyond just on the school campuses or in the classrooms or even on the athletic fields or even on extracurricular activities outside of school? This could be something that parents might want to be involved with, or even the churches might want to be involved with, or even seniors in senior facilities. What do you think?
I say absolutely. We're working with school districts. That's one subset, but we have worked with churches. We have worked with community centers. We've worked with youth sports leagues because
Yeah.
you would be surprised. Unfortunately, I have three young children, and we hear quite often from youth sports leagues that it's a lot of volunteer coaches. And so we're working to add in CPR education into the volunteer coaches, in training and initiation into becoming a coach. And so there are lots of opportunities. If you're listening and you are thinking, well, I'm not a school district or I don't have children in school, don't let that stop you. We want a cardiac emergency response plan is a plan to make sure that any and every entity is ready to respond in the case of a cardiac emergency. So we are happy to help and send you the resources just the same that we did to HEBISD. They can be applied to any organization to ensure that people are ready to act in the case of an emergency.
Speaking of reacting in the case of an emergency and extracurricular with sports, and Dr. Harrington, I know you're fully aware of this because you're a big football fan. In fact, your favorite team is the Buffalo Bills. A few years ago, on Monday Night Football, Damar Hamlin, the defensive back from the Buffalo Bills, he suffered a cardiac emergency on the field. And fortunately, the trainers and the doctors went out there and they were able to save his life. And you know, our own Troy Aikman was one of the commentators with Joe Buck, and they're just describing what was going on. The whole game shut down. It was one of those things where the whole country, anybody who was able to watch that game, they were just riveted at the scene of whether this guy would live or die. And of course, he lived, not only to live, but he got to go back to playing football again the next season. So, Dr. Harrington, were you able to, like I said, you're a Buffalo Bills fan. Were you aware of that? And can you talk about what your thoughts were when that was going on? And did that have play into anything about how you embrace this moment?
Oh, I watched that. I watched every minute of that. And just, I mean, DeMar died on that field. His heart
Yes.
stopped. And
Yes.
those trainers got the AED and they saved his life. And that's, and the rest of the story, DeMar Hamlin is starting for the Buffalo Bills right now. That's how far his comeback has come. That's pretty exciting. That the training, that research, all of that came together to give him that second chance. That you know, he is now living his dream, and he's the starting safety for the Buffalo Bills. That's pretty exciting. You know, one of the things you're talking about, you know, connecting and making sure all the community does know about that. We've taken that Damar Hamlin video that the American Heart Association put together, and we play it on Friday nights on our Jumbotron.
Great.
This Friday, South Lake and Trinity are going to meet at Pennington Field in front of probably 12,000 people, and that video is going to be playing. And we're going to share that with the entire community that are there that night.
It's the little things like that that actually, like I said, it touches people's hearts or makes them realize, guess what? You can save a life, and it's easier than you think. You don't have to be, you know, a superhero. You don't have to be Iron Man. You don't have to be the Flash coming in from Earth 2. Anybody can help out another person and make a difference and possibly save their life. Jenny, can you talk about how that video has helped you guys when you're, you know, trying to make people aware and being a part of the World Heart Day, which also, by the way, is on September 29th, right around the corner.
It is. And thank you for highlighting that. And I, you know, it is amazing when we at the Heart Association go out and talk about cardiac arrest and we bring up the incident with Damar Hamlin. So many people were watching.
Yeah.
And to your point, they were holding their breath, but they also got to see what it looks like when there is a cardiac emergency response plan in place. I think, you know, in the days following Damar's cardiac emergency, you heard from the trainers who said, we went over the plan of what to do in the case of an emergency. We knew where the AED was. We knew the ambulance knew, you know, how to get in. We knew how to get out. And that is what we, you know, when we're talking about cardiac emergency response plans, I often point to, that is what you got to see on live television, mm-hmm. was a cardiac emergency response plan being put in, you know, being utilized. And we are so grateful that everybody acted incredibly fast and that Damar Hamlin had such a great outcome. And we want that for anyone who experiences a cardiac emergency, that plan is put into place and followed. So, you know, I think his story just helps to illuminate why a cardiac emergency response plan is so important in our everyday lives. We never want to have to use it, right? We never, right, ever want to have to put it into place. But we all are living right now and seeing what happens when it is put into place and when it works. And I think it's just, he is truly an example of why CPR is so important and why working quickly is so important. And I think it just goes to show, you know, the benefits of the cardiac emergency response plan. And it's really helped us to get that message spread far and wide, because so many people were watching that evening.
Yeah.
And they're now watching him play, to Dr. Harrington's point, on Sunday, you know,
yeah,
Sunday afternoon, whatever he plays.
Right.
Yes. And
his career is not over.
It's not. And what a testament to the impact CPR can have, and in partnership with that AED, what the outcomes can be. And it's just exciting to know that hopefully we can spread that message and continue to make athletes and individuals, you know, you don't have to be an athlete,
right,
to experience a cardiac arrest, but to have everybody have that hope that comes with, okay, if people around me know what to do, I too can be back it to my life, and be able to continue to experience the joys that lie ahead.
Exactly. In fact, I'm going to drive this point home. I'm going to drive the point home with this example. This is from Coach Jimmy Johnson, former Cowboys coach. He used to talk about this all the time. A lot of people might look at Jamar and say, he's so lucky. He is just so lucky. And Jimmy Johnson used to always say, period, in life, in sports, whatever, he says, there's no such thing as luck. He said, luck is when preparation meets opportunity. In other words, the people who were there to do their jobs, they were prepared to help him. It wasn't pure luck. It was like they knew what to do. So what you're doing right now with the District of Lifesavers is just making people aware and prepared to actually save someone's life. And it's not about, oh, luckily, you know, he was able to or she was able to. No, it's when preparation meets opportunity and you're prepared for the moment. And everybody in the HEB ISD district is pretty much going to be prepared. And we're hoping this, that the word spreads, you know, through the American Heart Association and more, where more and more people and people and organizations and groups can be prepared for the opportunity to save and restart someone's heart and the cardiac emergencies that, that come about, because they do happen all of the time. So, Jenny, let me ask you this. You're part of the American Heart Association. What drew you to this in particular? Was there something in particular that said, you know, this is what I really want to do, and now it's part of your life?
Sure. Well, heart disease does run in my family and my husband's family. And so the work that I get to do, the education I get to share, is hopefully creating a safer and healthier environment for my children, so that my children will not have to experience a heart diagnosis mm-hmm. that is incurable and that could stay with them, you know, with them and with their children. And so that is what draws me to my work. CPR is a part of what I get to do, CPR education, but also trying to create healthier communities all across the area is what drives me to get to do this for my kids and for everyone else's kids and parents and grandparents. And so appreciate the opportunity to get to share about this. And hopefully, you know, we'll be able to have a safer environment for all of us and all of our families and friends in the case of a cardiac event.
Dr. Harrington, you kind of touched on it a little bit earlier. Can you talk a little bit about your family or if there's any situations in your family over time that you said, you know what, we were able to make a difference, or I wanted to be prepared, or, you know, anything in your family that makes people understand why this is close to you?
You know, we love our community, and this makes our community stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as we take care of each other, this is just one more piece. And I don't have one point. This is, you know, somebody was asking me about it. I'm like, it's the right thing to do. This is what you're supposed to do.
Yes.
When you have a position of influence, let's influence for good.
Mm-hmm. Jenny, I mentioned World Heart Day is September 29th. What are some of the things that people need to be aware about on that particular day?
You know, I think it's just realizing the information that we talked about, recognizing that it's an opportunity for you to share what you've learned here today, to tell your friends and family about the importance of CPR. The American Heart Association will certainly be putting out information around hands-only CPR, or the two steps to hands-only CPR. And so I would just ask that we take a minute that day to remind everyone around us that you can have an impact with CPR. You know, we tell, and the American Heart Association has a goal of training or educating one person in every household around CPR. But I like to say, well, if you're the only person and nobody else in your household knows it, and you're the one that needs CPR, who's gonna be able to save you? And so sharing the message, I think, is key on World Restart a Heart Day. Sharing the message about CPR, CPR education, why it's important, those two steps, so that we can make sure that everybody around us is prepared to save a life, whether it's saving our own life for those that are around us, helping people be ready to save our lives, or being able to save a life of anyone in our community. As Dr. Harrington said, we love this community. And so how can we make sure that it's safer for everybody?
And once again, you don't have to do mouth to mouth anymore. You don't have to be an emergency responder with the paddles. Pull, you know, they're hit. And all of a sudden, the heart starts beating. You can do this with a simple approach with your hands. But what you say, the most important part is make sure you dial 911 and they can walk you through this. They can help you if you're nervous, right?
Jenny? That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Well, we want to thank both of you for being on the show again. Is there, Jenny, any website that you want to pass along where people can find out more information? And same with you, Joe.
I would lead people to heart.org.
Joe, anything with you?
Just when that video pops up at the video on the Jumbotron at Pennington, take out your phone. There'll be a huge QR code, and you can learn hands-only CPR right there in the stadium.
Thank you both for joining us, and thank you all for joining us on Better Living, a show about people or organizations having a big impact here in North Texas. I'm your host, Chris Arnold. So long, everybody.